Yeah, that was yoga. That definitely was real yoga. The thing I know how to do.
Oh, man. I was a real warrior.
Ooh, hello. Welcome to Debatable, a fake television show where we know what poses are.
Did you just hit a three-pointer? Is that what you're shooting an arrow? Is that what you were doing?
I don't know. Happy Friday, everyone.
It's Friday. It's yes. Friday. Give us the music. Give us the Friday music.
It's the same music every day of the week.
Oh, yeah.
Right. We need some more bass for Fridays.
Can we drop a beat?
Yeah, I need something that knocks for my
Where's
Fridays.
Where's Izzy's marshmallow helmet mask thing? This is not yet Friday enough.
It's about 7 feet from me. Should I get it or should I wait till the end of the show?
That is Israel Gutierrez contemplating whether he's going to ruin the show or improve the show.
Oh.
By getting, that's the marshmallow mask music,
I'll
I think.
Right back, then. No problem. Momentito.
That's this Izzy.
Definitely not Friday music.
Making that microphone under his shirt, which remains on, shockingly, to everybody. That is Dominique Foxworth. You know him. He's here all the time with me. We sometimes stare at each other like this.
Are we done yet?
No.
Oh, great. Marshmallow mask.
Oh, there it is.
With a hat.
Nice. This has gone from, I think this is a bit too, I think we're now like going to owe licensing fees. This is not the first time Izzy has done this.
Oh, man.
The little hat. I didn't know Marshmallow had a little hat.
Is Alabaster off today? What is going on?
Alabaster's already given up.
It's almost a full minute.
He played the music.
I cannot.
He also looked at that menu and said, maybe we should do a whole show about Marshmallow.
Yeah. Alabaster,
when I sent out the tweet and I saw the thumbnail, I was like, ooh, my man Alabaster is scraping the bottom today.
That's right.
Earning his paycheck. Put together some damn good questions off of a nothing sports thing.
Well, you guys ready for the first one? Because we got an Alabaster special here. Oh. It's NBA Conspiracy Corner. Joe Lacob, he's talking again. He's talking about his payroll. He's talking about his relationship with the other NBA owners. And my question for you, what do you read into Joe Lacob's latest comments to Tim Kawakami?
So Joe Lacob talked to Tim Kawakami of The Athletic, Warriors beat writer for decades now, and he said that the thing that we have been saying, we broadly speaking in the media have been saying about how the Warriors may have a total bill for next year of $400 to $500 million, which would obviously set records in terms of NBA largesse. He is saying that is, quote, not even remotely possible. I'm already in trouble with the rest of the league. We kind of blew a hole in the system, and it's not a good look from the league's perspective, which I will just be very clear about here, is not the same thing as the light years ahead confidence that we have heard. This is like the hold on a second, I don't got it like that, which is not light years, but more cents and pennies.
I think we need to explain like exactly what he's talking about, right? It's like the NBA does not have a hard cap like the NFL. So they use like tax. Yeah, it's a very soft cap, which means you can go over it. And their ability... their incentive to try to keep teams under the cap is fining them, essentially, is they have to pay a tax for going over the cap. That's how potentially you could end up paying a bill of $400 or $500 million, even though Lacob says it's not true, because you're
also further penalized for consecutive years of tax paying. So you can be a repeat offender, as they say.
And I could understand why teams would be upset, but don't those teams get the money? Like the tax, so it's like a percentage of how far you've gone over, right? And then they split it up and give it to the rest of the teams. So if you want to overpay, like, have they set up I guess if you want to win a championship, then you're annoying.
Izzy, Dominique, guy who has been an executive with the NBPA, Players Association, is onto something here, I think, because are the owners, this is the question that I had too. Wait a minute. Joe Lacob is blaming other owners for why they can't ball out as flagrantly as they have liked to. And
this essentially
is the question.
Yeah. This to me feels like, it deserves a quote from an outgoing British prime minister, which is them's the breaks. Like those are the rules. Like we know we're getting penalized. We know we're paying out the wazoo for, you know, potentially a Jordan Poole. But yeah, like, this is not only what's in the books and we're willing to pay for it, and like you mentioned, we're sharing it with everybody else when we pay for it, but this is exactly what fan bases would want. Like, they want you to maximize the potential of your roster when it is championship level. And that's what the Warriors are doing here. They're just, you know, when it's a leaner time, when Steph Curry is no longer able to carry you to an NBA Finals just by existing, then they're going to back off. They will not even come close to hitting that luxury tax, and they will be, you know, good sports, or whatever you want to call it, within the luxury cap rules. But these are the rules. And so the idea that, you know, and the fact that they're doing this to barely, it's not like they're running away with a championship. It's not like they're doing this to create the Kevin Durant teams. They're doing it to just barely scrape by and win one. And again, that's how you got to do it. Win in those little margins, those little details of the, you know, the bench and whoever you're paying there.
But hold on, because I think something else is happening too, which is that, I mean, I don't believe personally that Joe Lacob gives a shit about what the other owners think. Right. I think Dominique is right when he says that other owners, via revenue sharing, the sharing sort of system, whatever it's called, they will benefit from the spending. But also, like, Joe Lacob's never cared about offending other NBA owners. What it seems to me is happening, Alabaster, is that Joe Lacob is saying, I may be very, very, very much the only owner who wants to spend $400-500 million on his team. But I don't necessarily want to do that if I can avoid, you know, if I can avoid paying full freight for Jordan Poole. It feels like he's negotiating in public a little bit, right? He's negotiating right now, and he's saying, I don't want to give these guys $400-500 million in total if I can avoid that, which maybe for now he can.
See, this is where I think Joe Lacob might be light years ahead. He's planning a more dastardly move. And I want to read you this other quote from Lacob. It's going to be difficult. I'm not going to sit here and lie to the fan base. It's going to be really difficult to figure out what we'll do next summer. Next summer is when Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins are up for free agent deals. They'll command near max money. That would bring them to that $400-500 million threshold. What do I read into what Joe Lacob's saying? Why pay them each $35 million a year when I can trade them before they're signed for another max player and take over the league again? This is, to me, Joe Lacob being like, all right, you don't want me to spend for my own roster? Great. I will ruin the competitive balance once again because I am truly light years ahead.
Mm. So you're saying he's telegraphing
that could be possible.
Something.
But even if that's the case, isn't that basically, so you're going through sort of stages of what you're trying to maximize, and obviously it's around the big three and their, you know, their championship window. They're at, let's just be honest, let's say the tail end of it. Let's say, as Draymond said, three out of the next four, so let's give them 4 or 5 years of a window. Now is when you mortgage the future a little bit. Now is when you don't worry about what everybody else says and just say, spend, spend, spend for 3 years, and then afterward you ask for your apologies. Because if it was, you know, the first part of this, yeah, you could stay with a Jordan Poole or with a Kuminga and say, hey, in 4 or 5 years, they're not going to be just rotation players. They're going to be critical to us winning a championship. Now you can't really say that. So if it is this, if it is, hey, we're trying to set up to make a trade just to sort of shock the world, it still revolves around being able to win it. The tail end, I guess, the last third of Steph Curry's career. So that, I think, is the focus on all of this, is just make, and, you know, 20 years from now, again, when we look back at this, we're never going to say, hey, they wasted an opportunity. Just like, you know, we look back and say, hey, the Bulls could have had eight in a row, right? If Jordan didn't do that, there's a what if there. There's not going to be a what if here, except for the 1 year with KD and Klay getting hurt, which you kind of throw injuries out the window.
If Dominique, if we're talking about Jordan Poole's contract in 20 years, something has gone very, very wrong in
or very, very
the evolution
right.
of our planet.
I don't know. Or very, very right. If we're talking about Jordan Poole's contract, then we must not have anything stressing us.
Like, we're talking about Scottie Pippen's contract like 30 years after, but Jordan Poole, you're right,
point.
Not the same.
That's a good point, though.
When that Steph Curry Last Dance documentary comes out and I get a whole episode mocking me for saying that he wasn't going to win any more championships, we're also going to get the Jordan Poole episode where they're like, we would have won another championship if Jordan Poole didn't postpone his surgery until the season started, and then also had high contract demands. But I mean, to me, the if owners are annoyed by this, I could imagine they are. but it's in the rules, as you guys said. It's kind of like if you're fouling at the end of a game to stop the clock and put them on the line, like you are willing to endure the penalty, which is giving your opponent free throws because it gives you some sort of advantage. This is the rule. And it also reminds me of the like franchise rule and or like franchise tag in football, where if you franchise a guy for three straight years, it's like prohibitive. It's never actually happened. The problem is the owners have not negotiated a high enough penalty. Like if you want to, if you want to make it illegal, then you must find a way, or you want to make a hard cap, then you must find a way to enforce that hard cap. If you want this kind of soft cap, that's like kind of a hard cap, then you're going to have to make more punitive rules.
It kind of just depends on whatever industry the owner's in. Because like Mickey Arison with the cruise ships, probably not going to go high over the taxes right now.
Not at this moment. But I mean, I don't know. It doesn't bother me at all. I was at the MBPA when we decided to not smooth the revenue because there was a big influx of revenue that the choice by the players union was to not smooth that revenue over the course of several years, which is what allowed them to get Kevin Durant. Also what allowed some like not max players to get max player money. So if it's in the rules and there is like some sort of hiccup or quirk that you can take advantage of, that is the point of competition. You're not cheating. So maybe they aren't actually mad at him. He's just putting this straw man out there in order to create some motivation to do something else. But if they are, they should shut up.
Well, I do think the owners definitely don't like.
I guess they aren't talking. He's putting words in their mouth. So he should shut up on their behalf.
You should shut up and they should continue to shut up. But while they're continuing to shut up, I do believe that they are actually not loving the fact that Joe Lacob is spending like twice as much as them. It's a bad look. It's just
But these are billionaire owners. The one thing I am not going to feel sorry for them is when they get big boyed by somebody else's money.
This is my point. No, this is my point.
That's how they live their life.
This is my point is that they are resentful and they should be. And I don't think anybody should have sympathy.
But why though? Like, they didn't pay Andrew Wiggins. They just made him into a championship player. Like, they could have gotten somebody else who wasn't, you know, overpaid and, you know, put him in that slot and said, okay, we can do this with any other player. They didn't pay him. And so, you know, I don't think other owners could really look at them and be like, hey, you guys are doing anything that we're even that upset about. I've spent the last 3 minutes just trying to figure out what Steph Curry's documentary will be called. And it's definitely got to be food related, right? Not to go on a tangent here, but... Mm.
Yeah, we'll work on that. I like that as
dessert,
a concept.
Something dessert related?
Can there be a chapter in there about how Dominique takes credit for the Warriors getting Kevin Durant, which happened like a couple minutes ago? I don't know if you guys noticed.
Credit?
I did not want that. Cap smoothing enabled Kevin Durant to get to the Warriors.
The lack of cap smoothing is what enabled Kevin Durant to end up with the Warriors. The reason why the owners, or part of the reason why I can't feel sorry for them,
is cap smoothing. This is what I think of. I'm sorry.
Soft cap is what that is.
Before we move on really quickly, does that mean, Dominique, did you destroy Kevin Durant's legacy by making him a bus rider with Steph Curry? Is that really what happened?
Yep. That's me.
Okay. Now that we're clear on that. Okay,
Dominique is the bus mechanic.
I can't waste any energy trying to defend a nonsensical claim like that. I learned a long time ago. You cannot waste your time fighting that.
There's a little domino. The big domino is Kevin Durant getting clowned by everybody. That is exactly what happened.
I don't think that, I don't think that owners are actually upset by them shifting the balance of competitiveness as much as they're upset by them creating the expectation that when you have a winner, cost be damned.
Yep.
And it's going to be really hard for any other owner who is but the cap, but the tax. Like, my response to any of them is sell your team. Like, Phil Knight's out there looking to buy a team. If you can't afford to go into the tax, either sell your team or stop with the stupid tax. Like, the point of the tax.
Sarver doesn't want to pay DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah. Then
no, exactly.
Thing or...
And so if you can't afford the stupid tax, then one, don't put it in there because nobody wants that tax other than the broke owners or the relatively broke owners. I don't imagine the rich owners want it because they are the ones that are paying the tax. The players don't want it because it's going to reduce their money. So, like, to me, it's confusing. If you cannot afford to sit in first class, then don't sit in first class, which, I mean, first class is beneath most of them, I'm sure. They're private jet money.
Oh, yeah, it's a very embarrassing.
On top of the plane, actually.
If you're flying Delta One and you own an NBA team, what a broke boy you are. Absolutely.
By the way, a group of billionaire owners grumbling. Like, I just want to hear and just listen to what that sounds like. Rhubarb, prostate, golf.
Yeah, the word rhubarb. Cloud of those grumbles, the biggest one is definitely prostate.
What is rhubarb? I mean, it's like...
I don't know.
Rhubarb,
I stole that joke
to me,
from 30 Rock.
It feels like a fruit, but is actually like an onion, maybe?
It's a vegetable. Good call, Pablo.
That's very confusing. Because strawberry, rhubarb, like, why
right,
would you...
Right, they go well together.
Doesn't make any sense, but...
Incredibly sour. Let's move on and talk about Summer League basketball. Oh, yeah.
The rhubarb of sports.
Oh, Paolo. I thought we were talking about Pablo for a second. I was getting excited. All right.
Yep. Oh, I was Paolo. Too. Now I'm less excited for this.
So, question I got for you guys. Bigger deal that Paolo Banchero looked... pretty good last night, or that Jabari Smith Jr. looked like a role player?
So Paolo Banchero looked real. You know, the Magic looking stupid because they passed on Chet, and Banchero looked like he was a very valid choice. One game into his life. That's not really a game because it's Summer League. But yes, 17-6-4. And Jabari Smith, how would you describe, guys, how Jabari Smith looked in contrast?
Oof. He looked like a guy. So I think with Chet, what we mentioned was like, okay, he didn't really do this a ton in college. He did it more in high school. And so now we watched it in the Summer League game. And it's like, okay, that's why you're so unique. With Jabari Smith, it looked like he was trying to do that, trying to show why he was different, and just wasn't doing it, wasn't accomplishing it. And that's, to me, more of the bad sign than Banchero's a good sign, because with Paolo, I think, you know, what you want to see is a willingness to be able to take that outside shot. And he not only took an open one, he took a step back and hit it. So he see, and you know, as soon as you see him, you recognize the NBA ready body and the ability to defend. And so I think you can plug him in as long as he's willing and able to make a couple of jump shots. You can plug him in right away. With Jabari Smith, he's got to be able to give you some of that other stuff, because if you're just banking on, you know, some offensive rebounds, some running up and down the court, and maybe a kick out three or two, I don't know if that's like the skill set where you're like, okay, this guy was a top three pick in the draft. That I think you can, which is crazy to say, the way the NBA has evolved, you can probably find for significantly cheaper when it comes to sort of, you know, what it means to your franchise.
I mean, Banchero's body, I think, is the thing that stands out to me when I was watching the game. So I think anybody can have, or not anybody, but having a good game in Summer League is better than having a bad game in Summer League. But neither of them, I think, are like definitive. Like, I'd rather be able to see my number one pick or my first round pick dominate for a stretch. But I'm not like going home thinking, oh, they blew it on this Jabari Smith pick. Like, what I saw him do was impressive. He had like skills that obviously can translate to the NBA. He didn't put it all together in the course of a game, but I have no concern based on one Summer League game. Actually, I feel confident, like seeing him handle the ball and shoot and do in spurts. Like, he has highlights. If you just like clip right. Smith's good plays, you could be convinced that he had an outstanding game too. But the thing about Paolo that I think is so impressive, which is a weird thing to be impressed by, is it's the NBA ready body. Like, he hit all those shots. He made great passes. He seemed to be making good decisions in presumably, like, simplified version of NBA basketball. Like, they weren't putting out complex offensive and defensive schemes. But he did all this while looking like a grown man. Like, when we all were 19, everyone was, like, slimmer. He, like, comes in with a body that I think that obviously got, well, not all of us were slimmer, but he comes with a body that obviously Chet Holmgren is probably jealous of, but it's a body that I think is durable, and it's not one that you should be concerned about. So it seems like they found a piece that they can build around. The hard part is now finding the rest of those pieces.
The only thing about Jabari, though, I think obviously in Summer League it benefits you to be a ball handler, right? Because you are more in control
of
your own offense is. So if he needs a good point guard and we still haven't seen, then that's fine. Like, as long as you can sort of project or like If you're these teams, just show me some video where, hey, we executed something. He was not the primary ball handler, but he either drew the defense or he finished or something. Then you can sort of assess who he is. But right now, it definitely, you know, benefits the guys who can create their own shots.
Well, this is where we got to remind people what Summer League is, right? Because the rookies are there and we're all excited to see the rookies to judge them and make snap judgments in the way that we're doing right now. But it's also for like guys who are desperate as hell to get a job. And the guys who have the ball and are desperate as hell to get a job, they end up taking, as Josh Christopher and Tari Eason did, and I believe I'm pronouncing the second name right, although I have no idea because I've only seen that name for the first time right now. They combine for 35 shot attempts. And Jabari Smith, yeah, takes 10. And this is the context we got to evaluate this in. And that's why, like, the experiment here, there's a lot to take away if you want to be a propagandist, but the reality of it is so particular that it does make me laugh when we make so much of it.
Really don't have a choice here. I mean, we could sit here and talk about Shohei Ohtani every day, but yeah, I think we've got to focus on some Summer League basketball.
I mean, so two things. Number one, Shohei Ohtani should be talked about. Number two, Dominique has done the thing where it's like, can we hear him? Because I can't, but maybe you guys can out in the world.
You can hear me?
There he is. All okay, right. He's back. Sorry, Dominique.
I'm sorry. I muted for a second. But anyway, I read this morning that Banchero has a tattoo that says no pressure. Do you get tattoos that say no pressure?
Oh, I don't like
if
that.
You're actually feeling no pressure. I mean, it's he played like he had no pressure, but I
no,
feel
it's
like
a, it's a,
that
it's
is like a reminder. You like get that as a reminder of yourself.
It's like, that'd be great trash talk. If you're an opponent of his, you just go up to his forearm and cover the no right when he's about to shoot some free throws and be like, oh, that's some pressure right there.
But it's like imagine encountering somebody who had a chest tattoo that just said confidence.
Like, yeah.
I don't know about that.
I mean, I feel like you can get tattoos you can get tattoos that say confidence without one that literally says confidence. So like maybe the same thing could be true for Paolo. It's like we could find him a tattoo that says I don't feel any pressure without having one that says no pressure.
Right.
Are you
so
gonna
tattoo.
Tell me that you're gonna tell me that like a dead family member told him to get it and now
I'm just gonna continue to roast it because it's close. He did the double meaning. It's actually K-N-O-W pressure. No pressure. He knows pressure.
Oh, so it's not N-O?
Yeah, it's not N-O.
Oh, God.
That's worse.
But, you
can
know,
just
so he feels pressure more than others.
No pressure, K-N-O-W, pressure, is worse.
Isn't that the Luisa song, by the way? Wow, I'm wearing the perfect shirt for this.
Nice. Very strong.
Surface pressure, I believe.
Izzy reveals that he has a no unconfidence tattoo on his chest.
Oh gosh. I mean, I'm gonna work on a better idea for him to like a way to signify knowing pressure. Like, man, get a diamond, right? Isn't that what people say?
Wait
like,
a minute. Now
pressure.
We're gonna design the Aaron Rodgers tattoo version of this tattoo for Paolo Banchero.
Exactly, because he needs. I mean, Aaron creativity style turned up to 100. You don't want it there. You should turn it back a little bit from there, but Paolo's is down at zero. We need you with a little bit more creativity.
Can
don't
we talk
just
about,
like
okay. I'm glad we're here.
You know, like
because
I think a diamond would be perfect because that or some busted pipes. Put busted pipes on this arm, diamond on the other arm, and then you're like
you're trying
hey.
To get that busted pipe, is what you're saying.
No,
yeah.
No,
or
no.
you got some coal on one arm.
Ooh.
And diamonds,
or if you just have coal,
when you flex, it becomes diamond. Can you?
If you just have coal, because coal would suggest that there was no pressure, right? Because I guess you also need pressure to make coal, but you need even more pressure to make diamonds. Yeah, like coal is like in the center of the
segment's going.
What's coal?
I have no idea. Like now we're just talking about like 3D tattoos
on the next level. Just to recap here, Alabaster, who is very excited about rhubarbs, is now out on coal. I'm sorry. I didn't realize where your line was.
Man, he's a climate change denier, so he...
Not joking,
Alabaster. I'm sorry.
If anybody's got to be careful with the sun, it's Alabaster. I don't believe he's
just a tattoo of a furnace with like fossils in it, like dinosaur bones in it.
funny story before we move on. My older brother once, for my birthday when I was like a little kid, got me a gigantic box filled with the smaller box, filled with the smaller box, filled with the smaller box, filled with the smaller box that was just filled with coal. And I was devastated when I got to the end of it.
Honestly, this explains a lot.
I feel like you shouldn't have been surprised, because I don't think
I was every time.
I don't think that your brother was somebody who was like super nice all the time and gave you great gifts all the time, and then just suddenly did that. Like, that's a track record. A guy who puts in that much effort to troll you has a track record of trolling, and you, sir, are just a mark.
I have follow-up questions about this in the way that I have follow-up questions about every NBA player and athlete, and there are many of them who have Joker tattoos.
Yeah.
Like, why you guys, what's the, why? What about the Joker appeals to you, Odell Beckham Jr.? What about the Joker appeals to you, Jason Tatum? Can someone ask these questions?
I miss the days of Brad Miller and Greg Ostertag, who would have like a Scrappy Doo tattoo, which was my favorite ever. Brad Miller, Scrappy Doo tattoo. Ostertag with the Fred Flintstone, I think, spinning a basketball tattoo. Oh, the best.
Oh, we made the, okay, so the no pressure tattoo. Wow, wait, okay. So the no is bigger than the K and the W, so he is trying to do both at once, which is like even worse than what I thought. And then he has a yin-yang tattoo underneath, which is a throwback to me of like an era, which I miss, which is just people getting wildly insane Asian-inspired tattoos. Like,
I've got one that I won't show.
We have time for one more topic.
Wait, what
do you guys want? Okay. Damian Lillard or Wimbledon?
I want Damian. Well, I want both.
I want Wimbledon. We're going to have to fight over this one.
All right. You win, Izzy.
Woohoo!
All right, let's go for it. If we have time, we'll do a Dame on the back end. But my question is, if Nick Kyrgios beats Novak Djokovic in the Wimbledon final, then blank.
Okay, so Izzy cares about this a lot. Izzy, the floor is yours, because I have no idea why you care about this so much.
A lot. I care about it more than Damian Lillard getting ghosted by his team owner. But I just think with Wimbledon, like, there's a lot, you know, with elite tennis on the men's side, it's only been a few guys of any sort of interest. And when somebody else sort of knocking on that door, just in terms of interest level, because nobody thinks Nick Kyrgios is going to be out here, you know, getting to major finals all the time. He's going to collapse upon himself over and over again. But, like, people who've been watching him more than ever, you saw sort of what would you call that with Tsitsipas? Just sort of a breakdown a little bit, where he was
I would call it Nick Kyrgios.
He's Kyrgiosing.
Yeah, he had a little Tsitsipas with him, yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people were just starting to, not just starting, but more people are starting to recognize him. And those who have always had an affinity for him and his ability are like, oh, wow, he's actually getting far in this tournament here. Now with Rafael Nadal giving him a pass to the final, I think it feels like everybody can just sort of focus and, like, judge Nick Kyrgios for what he is. Is he a guy who you love to watch play tennis and is just wasting this great ability? Is he, like, an everyman who you love because, hey, that's how mad I would get, or I just, you know, he's not really holding back his emotions. He's also got this domestic abuse case now where he has to sort of handle while doing all this and while having the most popularity he's ever had. So he's just kind of this figure that's, like, you don't really know what to think of, but if you just stick to watching him play tennis, might be the most entertained you are, you know, all year long watching the sport.
Well,
I don't know what the answer to that is, but I know it's just going to be a lot of conflicted people if he ends up winning.
Yeah, my take, Dominique, on Kyrgios is simply that I wish I could enjoy him more guilt-free.
Yeah. Right.
You know, because he has all the elements of being a figure of chaos, a Joker tattoo kind of guy. But then I'm just like, wait a minute, but now the serious, like, real-world stuff is just like, okay, well, the domestic violence stuff is being litigated, but we're trying now to obviously talk about, like, the character that's going to be in a Wimbledon final against the guy in Djokovic that comprises the most unliked final, you would say, I think, in tennis history.
I think you nailed it, Pablo, with that. Is like, we have to talk about the domestic violence stuff. It's certainly something that is a part of his story now, and we'll see where those charges end up. But it is a part of the story that sucks all the fun out of the rest of the story, which I feel almost guilty even saying that I'm annoyed that it sucks the fun out of the story because it's much more than that to the ex-girlfriend that he's accused of assaulting. However, the only thing about, he's one of the few tennis players who's not like a consistent, perpetual major winner whose name I know and I actually care about. Because he made tennis more fun and interesting because he was such a unique character. And you used the Joker tattoo thing. I think that was a good example or a good analogy to bring up because
chaos.
He is the chaos agent that these other guys maybe think that they are or want to be. Because Jason Tatum is like lukewarm as it comes to like NBA players. And Odell Beckham Jr.
Tatum.
Yeah, Odell Beckham Jr. is like, yeah. He's like a receiver. He's like a receiver.
Yeah, he is nowhere close to Kyrgios in terms of the chaos.
And Kyrgios is like, you let this, like, frankly, basketball player or NFL receiver into the country club, and it is fun until he does something stupid.
Right, because you can't, like, you watch these sort of, you know, temper tantrums or what have you, and normally you're just like, all right, it's enough. It's bad to look for you. Like, yeah. But now you're thinking, okay, if this is how he loses his temper on the court, what are we projecting off the court? And you're forced to think about those things as opposed to be like, oh, man, it's fun to watch this guy lose it. And so that part, yeah, maybe this is a case where he's just going to look at it and say, from now on, I'll very much try to hold in my frustrations on the court because people are going to judge me in a way, you know, that's different than even before. And so, yeah, it's sort of, like you said, takes a lot of the outside fun out of it, and now you're just watching for the sport. And even then, like, he's such a unique talent that you're going to see some things that you've never seen before, and on the Wimbledon final stage. So yeah, it's just a really complex viewing.
He doesn't have a coach. He doesn't train. Right. All things that Alabaster told me before. Like, that is fun and interesting that he is like this guy who took a year off to play video games at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah,
it's like it's such an anathema to tennis that it's sad that he's also accused of domestic violence.
Yeah, so if Nick Kyrgios beats Novak Djokovic in the Wimbledon final, then all of us are going to have conversations that are even less fun than the one that we just made as fun as humanly possible. So you're
Thanks
welcome.
A lot. No Damian Lillard and Judy Allen talk.
Hey, it's July. We can hold on to that one for a while.
There's intrigue in that one. It feels like it's a saboteur at the foot. It feels like in that story.
This goes all the way to the top of the New York Post.